You might think that all technology was assistive technology, but it turns out much of the tech we use daily is rather more assistive for some people than others. If keyboards and mice aren't within your abilities, for instance, the internet can be a closed book. But off-the-shelf technologies can also badly serve a huge range of people and often need further work, let's call it hacking, to make them useful. Moving things in exactly that direction is Professor Lisbeth Goodman, a UCD academic working in the area of universal design, who runs Dublin's Smart Lab, an acronym that stands for...
Which stands for Site-Specific Media Arts Lab, and it's a group of artists, technologists, and now engineers, medical doctors, architects, and all kinds of people across disciplines who gather around the world to address real social problems and to invent and or innovate new tools to solve those problems. I was actually trained in the arts as a performer and philosopher. Dancer, and a lot of our early work started from there. We did Shakespeare, we did contemporary dance, and then we started applying what we knew from the art and technology crossover sector. We ran one of the earliest Framework 5 programs called Radical, which was research agendas developed in creative arts labs, and we finally got the European Commission to fund three women artists from three different countries to lead a very major project that allowed us to bring artists and technologists together to create a permanent platform for Europe in that. And that network is still the Smart Lab network, growing and growing. 15 years ago, probably the first time we started taking grants from major multinationals, I was suspicious of it for 10 years because I didn't want to be tied down and find that we couldn't give the tools away. And that was perhaps naive in the early days. In the end, what we find is that a lot of the grants that we get are from corporate social responsibility funds of the multinationals. And that's not just a cynical move by the multinationals. They're doing really important work on the ground by funding projects that wouldn't happen if they had to be commercialized immediately or if they needed government mandate. I had the privilege of working on the biggest ever learning technology project that reached 7 million of the poorest kids in America and globally. And we got to set up cool tech clubs for them and get in voluntary grandparents and get them hot meals and exercise and help with their homework as well as all the technology. But the technology was just the anchor to get all the rest of that into the space. And it made a huge difference, particularly for kids on the native reservations who turned out to have some of the wackiest and most effective hacking methodologies already developed. And they went further and they're doing great stuff. Eye control is one of the most exciting things that we've had the privilege to work on over the years. And we came into that field almost sideways because we run a PhD program and always have done. And several students came to us wanting to do their PhDs with us who had cerebral palsy, quite advanced cerebral palsy. So it was clear that in order to write the PhD for both of the first colleagues we worked with, we were going to need an interface that would allow them to write more easily. And some of the old switches, the old interfaces for people with CP and other conditions are really bad for the body, you know, the whacking your head against a switch and, you know, the repetitive strain injury that comes from those interfaces, useful though they were when there was nothing else. So we started looking for anybody who really knew about alternative interfaces, and we had the good grace to find Dr. Mick Donegan, who was doing some of the earliest work. Mick trained as a special needs teacher, and he observed the way that kids were hurting themselves using these switches, and he just said, we've got to have a better way. And Mick's work, and you know, we've benefited from working with Mick over the years in so many ways, but he's the perfect example. There should be a Nobel Prize for Mick Donegan. He's the perfect example of open, accessible technology because he refused to sell out to any one company. He could have been a billionaire many times over by now, but he said, I'm not in it for the money. I will work with every company that makes eye control technologies. I just want you to let me use them as interfaces for disabled people instead of commercial. Because the technology, like so many technology tools, was there. It was used in various forms by, you know, Pepsi, Coke, everybody who puts up billboards on the side of the highways tracking where the eyes are falling. And if they're not falling on the logo, they're moving the logo. That's the technology. There's one gentleman, I think he's in Italy now, who's back at work as a web designer and using everything is eye controlled. So it is. It's the kind of stuff that I get most excited about because there are many other versions, but these tools exist, and that's why we work in Smart Lab on innovation rather than invention, because invention takes a long, long time and it might not work and you have to start again. And innovation is about taking what's out there and adding something or retrofitting for a different purpose or a different audience and making a faster impact that we might all build on faster. The old fail faster, fail better, and do something useful. While technology is changing so fast and people's needs are changing so fast as well, it's the way to go, I think. There's lots of things I would like to invent, but that would be what the old funding bodies call longitudinal research. And since nobody funds longitudinal research, but there's lots of things I'd like to invent. The most basic one still doesn't really exist. When my dad was dying in New York, and that went on for a period of several years, and I was in London, he would ask me all the time for a phone with a Lisbeth button. And he couldn't hold his hand still, couldn't hear properly, couldn't look at the screen to see. He just wanted to be able to pick up one thing that would vibrate for long enough that he would know it was there, that it was stable enough that he could pick it up, and that all he had to do is hit a button, and whether it was someone ringing him or me ringing him, it would work. And he, even if it wasn't me, if it was me sleeping in London in the middle of the night, he could say, honey, someone's ringing me, find out what they want, and I could speak to that person and tell him. And it's actually so doable. And many companies have made versions of the elderly citizen's phone, but there's still nothing like that, the Mark phone or the Elizabeth phone or any the one gadget that would work for somebody either with a disability or who's just elderly and cannot manage a complex device. And what you really need then, you can put all the bots in the background and all the animatronic connections and devices, but in the end, you really want a button that connects to the person who will not mind at any hour of the day or night answering and saying, Daddy, your slippers are under the bed. that's the gadget. And it should just be an innovation because the tools are there, but they're owned by different networks and different companies, and it needs a kind of group hackathon from industry and government and removal of the territories surrounding service providers and all of that nonsense to provide that tool in a way that would work globally. Unless we all live right near to our parents, it's not going to work unless we hack that global network.
Professor Lisbeth Goodman there of UCD's Smart Lab, and ucd.ie/smartlab for more on what they call creative technology innovation for real social change.